this seems to make sense, if you think about it, that our healthcare industry would be as complex as the human bodies it cares for. Both are built from systems of ever-increasing intricacy layered on top of one another. Both are built from a need to move forward through a mix of chemistry and chance, tradition and innovation, action and reaction. Each day across the globe, providers and patients, people ask to be healed or to heal. They engage with these intimate and enormous complexities. But at the center of these shared complexities, no matter the country or culture, we find the simple questions of what's wrong and how can we make it better? Welcome to Steps to Value, a podcast that explores the intersection of people, process, and technology in healthcare as the industry moves towards a value-focused model. I'm your host, Rod Pihowski, and in today's episode, we'll talk to one of 2016's most influential women in health IT, Rochelle Blake. Rochelle discusses the value of engagement with the complexities of this glorious system we call life and of the systems we've built to sustain it. All that and more coming up. I'm here with Rochelle Blake, CEO of Omni Microsystems and Omni Med Solutions, a health information technology development and consulting firm. Rochelle is a recipient of the 2016 HIMSS Most Influential Women in Health IT Award. Rochelle, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks, Rod.
Well, in your 30 years' experience in the implementation of software solutions in the healthcare arena, what have you found to be the hallmarks of successful implementations? And by contrast, are there any hallmarks of, well, we'll just say disastrous ones?
Definitely. I think in both regards, there are definite indicators that will lead to success. And success comes about when you involve clinicians from day one. Any implementation is not simply an IT process. And I think over the past 20 years, it's been great to see how the process of implementations has evolved to really engage clinicians from day one, from not just the build stage, but from selecting the system to looking at making sure it's not just PowerPoint presentations and infusing from day one and a clinical workflow. So looking at the day in the life of the clinician. And also, of course, considering how that patient will be engaged from day one. So it's looking at the day in the life and, not stopping there, but throughout the course of the implementation to, you know, throughout activation and all the way through support, of course. And of course, then the hallmarks, you know, will be there when they're not involved and when they're not engaged and when it does become simply an IT process. I currently am residing in Hamburg, Germany, and it's really interesting to see. Everyone thinks that, and historically you would think, oh, wow, Germany, the home of technology. Everything is really technology-oriented, but reality strikes when you learn that 30% of the country has electronic implementation of medical records. 30%. And the reason is because most every system that's been implemented has been from an IT perspective. And so, great, they can develop technologies, but they haven't integrated clinicians from day one. And so there you see clearly hallmarks of good implementations versus bad ones. I think as we go on, we're going to see greater percentage of adoption throughout Germany. It's definitely happened in other countries like Denmark. I think the U.S. is a good model. We still have a ways to go, but I definitely see that as being a good versus bad indicator.
Yeah, and that's actually a real problem when it's perceived to be owned by and initiated by and managed by the IT department. If it's an IT project, the clinical side, the organization doesn't have ownership in it.
Yes.
And there's a lot of resistance there.
Absolutely.
How do you, so you do a lot of work in Europe then, or just in Germany specifically?
Pretty much throughout Europe.
Okay.
Throughout Europe.
So is Germany unique in that respect then, or is this kind of typical throughout your experience?
Yeah, very interestingly, Germany is pretty unique. I mean, there are other countries especially in Eastern Europe, that are similar in terms of adoption. But Germany, being a large country, a very large country, is really kind of outstanding in their field in terms of lack of adoption. The UK, France, Spain, Denmark to the north, these countries have all had very high rates of electronic adoption in their hospitals and in the ambulatory communities. I will say that Germany has fair adoption in ambulatory communities, but still less than half. And it's a sad commentary because it's sad for patients. And all of us, no matter if you're a health IT professional or not, we're all consumers of health. We are all patients from time to time, every single person in the world. And we all have medical health needs. And I've been a patient, and I've been a patient in Germany. And I'll tell you what, when you see that the workflows are there, but they could be implemented and helped by technology, and they're not, that's when you really see, wow, there's no clinical decision support. And you really see, wow, just a simple implementation with integration with clinicians would make a huge difference.
So you're absolutely, workflow is a part of this. So I think what we're getting at here is maybe a difference between the way developers view this and the way clinicians view this. Are they speaking the same language? Is there, what do you see the gap or the loss? What's lost in translation, I guess, is what I'm trying to ask.
It's interesting you say that, Rod, because, yeah, of course, we have the physical language barrier in Germany, you know, being from the U.S. But you're right. I mean, around the world, there is this language barrier between IT and process systems speak and between clinical speak. And for the 30 years of my career, especially having a background in clinical practice in internal medicine, I've been, and others, of course, in informatics, we've been trying to bridge this gap terminology-wise and otherwise in informatics, and saying, yes, we need to all speak the same language. We need to come to common terms. And that's a really big part of it. I think informatics itself is doing a large part of that. But really, I think a large element is also bringing everyone to the same table. Like I said before, integrating from step one, clinicians in the process. But it's not just that one way involving clinicians. It's also training and retraining clinicians that IT is not the bad guy. You know, you also need to be able to communicate with IT, and you do need to know something about IT. So you can't be afraid. When someone tells you, is the system on? Don't think that's necessarily demeaning. That is a workflow process, and you need to go through, you know, a troubleshooting, and that might be the first thing you might think of. And maybe it didn't occur to you. Is the light on, and are things working?
Right.
So, you know.
Sometimes it is as simple as
it
the
really
cord
can
out
be.
Of the wall.
Absolutely. So I think you're absolutely right. It's we all need to talk the same talk.
Well, so speaking of language and taxonomy, I guess, we're all about the value of health IT on this program. Can you talk about how you approach value of IT, and is there some structure that you use in order to help people achieve that?
Absolutely. I mean, when you think of value in IT, and you can think of that in a lot of ways. You can put a dollar sign on it, certainly. I mean, that really equates to value. Then, you know, you certainly get the C-suite talking, especially from large institutions. You can talk about the value in terms of what it means to people, in terms of things like safety, in terms of security. Value can be in terms of education, in terms of, we work a lot with workforce training, making sure people are prepared. There's a lot of value in that. I think that there are some really good elements within what HIMSS has to offer. For example, within the STEPS program, I use that very frequently. There are many, many elements that really show the true value in so many facets of what we do, from implementations to workforce development to education. And when you're really looking at finding the value, we really rely on steps. I do, to look at each of these five areas, really, and find what the value is in each of these areas. I worked with benefits realization for a lot of organizations in throughout Europe, including NHS in the UK, as well as in Germany. And really, it's really hard to show it without going through the steps. I mean, it just is a natural fit. You can not only show, of course, the real financial value, but more than that, I mean, look at the value that you're, when customers are happy, when there's customer satisfaction. I mean, that's huge value. And that's value you can show. I mean, that's tangible. When your staff is happy and they're not leaving, consistently, that's real value. When you have things like, you know, you really have it in your workflow and your workflow works smoothly and you're not spending time redoing, you know, hours and hours of dictation or not dictation, but hours and hours of documentation. That's really value.
I know you and I spoke, several years ago now when we first developed the STEPS framework. I think you probably called me within like a week of us announcing that, and you've been a very early adopter of that, and thank you for that. It's you've shown great support, and I'm happy to hear that it's actually making a difference, and it's proving to be a useful tool. I'd kind of like to shift now to you a little bit. You are a recipient of the 2016 Most Influential Women in Health IT Award. Congratulations.
Thank you.
How did you get into the health IT sector? What's your origin story?
Wow.
That's a while ago.
Yes. Wow. Oh, let's see. I guess 30 years now, or so. I started off, actually, it's funny because, you know, when you call up like Amazon or something, they say, what was your dream job as a child? And it was a doctor. And I always wanted to be a doctor. From an early age, and I was a pre-med student, and I was ready to go to med school, and other things happened. So I did my undergrad work, and I became a PA, and I was a real early PA. There weren't very many physician assistants at that time, in the late 80s, and as I was doing clinical practice, I realized very early that, wow, you know, computers are really kind of going to be the way things are going to go. I could see that. And I was always really drawn to computers, actually. So I went back and got my master's, and I wanted to kind of teach. And as I was doing that, I was recruited by a company, actually Dictaphone. They said, you know, we wanted to get you to come and do some consulting and help us develop this drag and dictate software.
I remember that.
You all probably remember that. I did a little consulting with them, and I really got into the consulting world and started learning about systems and got into consulting and informatics. And so the days we've evolved from Wangs and IDX and Last Word to where we are today, it's been a long and really interesting journey. But that's where I kind of started off. And before clinical informatics, we didn't have degrees. It was so amazing at the gala we had earlier this week or last night to see now they have, I mean, at all levels, they have degrees in health informatics. We had nothing. It was tribal knowledge, learning about what informatics was or about anything having to do with IT systems in terms of a healthcare perspective. So it's really great to see where we've come in all these years throughout the 90s and early 2000s and now 2010.
So speaking about the journey,
yes.
How is your experience and what are your observations about the environment for women in this industry, and how has that changed since you've come through this journey that you've discussed? What kind of challenges have been overcome? What challenges may still remain?
Well, there are still ceilings, and you know, I'm fortunate in that I was able to be able to start my own business after years and years of working in corporate America for consulting firms, for hospitals, for organizations, where it was very difficult to climb higher, to really get to the position I really wanted. There was always, it seemed, an old boy network, and to a certain extent that exists. I am happy to say that I do see more change happening. A lot of my fellow recipients of this award have really shown that they are the women that can move and shake and change the world. And they are at the top of their careers, and especially within HIMSS, and those who are currently at HIMSS, and those who have used HIMSS as a launching point, like Dana Alexander and some others going forward. And now the incoming chair, Denise, just amazing women who are now, yes, really making changes. But, you know, we do still have a ways to go. My biggest thing is that we need our younger women to become more involved in healthcare IT. So my big goal and drive is to help mentor young women in health IT, especially women of color, and women who may come from communities where historically they've not been exposed to healthcare IT. And so as long as I can and am able to do so, that's where my real passion will lie.
Well, speaking of mentorship, do you have any memorable mentor experiences? Did you have any an early mentor, and is there anything that your mentor shared with you that's been very meaningful in your career?
I've had a couple of really great mentors along the way. Joanne Kimmer, Connie Berg, some real phenomenal women that have inspired me, touched me, helped me grow, that are still in my life. Some who are here that I see that check on me every time I come to, you know, the HIMSS convention.
Still and friends.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that is a very important relationship to have a mentor through all stages of your career, and then to make that transition and become a mentor and use your experiences to help others along the way. I firmly believe in succession planning. And I think the only way for real success in any field, no matter what that is, and no matter in what company you're in, you really need to have a succession plan. I've worked in many organizations where they do no succession planning. And in fact, they want to keep all that knowledge to themselves, and they feel threatened when anyone comes close. I actually worked myself out of an entire role in industry. I wrote a book called The Medical Transcriptionist Handbook back in 1993, when my daughter was born. And medical transcription is pretty much an almost dead industry. Not completely, but pretty much. And I worked myself out of that career by doing other things. Physicians need to do this themselves. And that's okay, because that's, in a way, succession planning. You need to move forward and go forward in the future and train people and train others to do what you're doing. So I firmly believe in mentorship.
It's also advancing the art, because you're sharing the knowledge and documenting it so that it can spread more widely.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Rod.
So we have one last question for you, if you be so kind as to answer this question for us.
Sure.
We ask all of our guests this. We live in a world of technology. We talk about technology and the value of it. And this doesn't have to be in the healthcare space, but what's your favorite technological invention that really impresses you? And what do you think its impact has been on our culture?
Well, you know, this is going to sound interesting, because I have an iPhone. And I really love this. There are several things I don't love about the iPhone, but there is one thing: the little health app that's integrated into the newer iPhones is really fantastic. It's low impact. You don't have to do a lot. It can monitor your steps. It contains your basic health information, and it's pretty non-invasive. everyone has a phone. It's kind of there. It's not in your way. But, and it also has an emergency kind of break the glass kind of, context. So you can find that information if you do enter it into the application. Someone can find that in case of an emergency. So I think it's great. You could put your medications and allergies in, and it's right there in your iPhone. I mean, I think it could be in other, maybe Android applications too, but I just think that that kind of thing is what we need to do more of. At Omni Microsystems, we're doing some of that. We're doing some of that kind of technology development, and we're doing especially in the senior space. So those kind of things I think are going to help the most. They help patients. They help clinicians. They help us all. Like we said at the beginning, we're all consumers of healthcare. And I think that has been one of the greatest things that we have.
Rochelle Blake is CEO of Omni Microsystems and Omni Med Solutions. Rochelle, thank you so much for joining us on Steps to Value.
Thank you, Rod.
The long-term and post-acute care roundtable helps shape the direction of HIMSS in serving the needs of LTPAC providers and vendors. The LTPAC roundtable meetings focus on topics relevant to the LTPAC IT community to include professional development, public policy initiatives, interoperability, and the value of health IT. Get involved today. Go to HIMSS.org and click on the link for the long-term and post-acute care roundtable at the top of the page. So how do you empower others to engage with the complexities of our health and healthcare system? Send us your thoughts as a voice memo or an email, and we'll play it or read it on the air at the end of our next episode. You can send those comments to value@hims.org. We'd like to thank our guest, Rochelle Blake, for sharing her perspective on the global implications of the search for value in health IT. For more information on everything discussed by today's guest, please visit this episode's landing page at hims.org/steps-to-value. Steps to Value is a HIMSS North America production. The series is co-produced by Adam Baser. Kelly Lippitt is our guest relations manager. I'm Rod Pihowski. See you next time on Steps to Value.